She sneaks around the world from Korea to Carolina. She's a sticky fingered filcher from Berlin down to Belize. She'll take you for a ride on a slow boat to China. Tell me,
where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
Steal their soul in South Korea, making another country uncle from the Red Sea to Greenland. They'll be singing the blues. Well, they never Arkansas her steal the mekong from the jungle. Tell me,
where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
She go from Nashville to Norway, out and to Zimbabwe, Chicago to Czechoslovakia,
and back.
Well, she'll ransack Pakistan and run a scan in Scandinavia. Then she'll stick them up down under and go pickpocket birth. She was the miss and misdemeanor when she stole the beans from Lima. Tell me,
where in the world is
Carmen Sandiego?
My name is Gary Butterfield.
And coming to you from Ohio, this is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Adaptation Decay, the Patreon bonus show where we talk about how video games have been adapted into other media.
Yeah, and my little geography call out there at the start was because this episode is about Carmen Sandiego. Takes place in Ohio. Mansfield, yep. Speed City, baby.
Takes place outside Cole's house. It's just Adam Sandler just being like, what?
I'm cool.
I'm cool. Look at this supermodel who thinks I'm attractive. Speaking of supermodels that I find attractive, Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah. I'm happy that we're not alone in that I'm not alone in that, and that we can get it out of the way.
I'm actually going to go real to bat on just what a beautiful, classy lady the chief is a little bit later.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, like Carmen Sandiego herself, sexy mystery.
Yes.
Carmen in the sheets, chief in the streets, like 100%.
Yeah.
The, it is just, double trouble on weekends.
Street sheets.
Street sheets. We're talking about Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah.
A couple different adaptations of Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah. So we're doing two things. We are doing Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego and Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego, kind of a split episode because I didn't feel like doing two episodes about a game show.
I watched an extra episode of the game show this morning.
Oh yeah,
breakfast though, just because I find it really comforting and enjoyable.
This is like the most intensely nostalgic thing we've covered, I think.
There's a bunch of them on YouTube in case anyone wants to join us in this. also just to look at different ways. You know, we weren't going to do another Adaptation Decay on Carmen Sandiego in the future.
No.
On the cartoon, like unless there's like a movie or something.
Right.
You know, then I could see doing it. But this kind of made the most sense.
I'm positive there's like there is a series of like straight to DVD Carmen Sandiego animated movies.
For sure. Could be.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like a big budget movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know. With like Idris Elba as Double Trouble.
with Idris Elba as Carmen Sandiego.
It's gone too far.
Will the diversity police ever shut up?
In the interest of progress, we have replaced this Latina woman with a black man.
With a gigantic black Englishman. I would fucking watch the hell out of that. Like, especially if they didn't comment on it at all, or if there's just like everyone just did their lines but there's a beat before they react to Carmen Sandiego. Whenever Carmen Sandiego does anything, boy, I'm going to the stolen the chocobo, you know, or whatever, like because Idris Elba has a ridiculously thick accent when he's not acting. You know, and then everyone just goes like, okay, we'll get you, Carmen. Get away, you slippery thief.
Bring back George Washington's wooden teeth.
Yeah, just like one. Oh, I got your teeth, I do. I'm a communist. Anywho. Carmen Sandiego.
Does anybody not know Carmen Sandiego? Like what this is based off of?
Oh, probably. Like, I think that, there's a bunch of edutainment game, you know, kind of titles that most people are familiar with. And I think number one is probably Oregon Trail.
Yes.
Oregon Trail has the most ubiquity.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I think before Carmen Sandiego, and this could just be like scuttlebutt and like word on the street, mm-hmm. You know, just kind of talking to people, going out and doing man on the street interviews here.
Oh, yeah.
is I think that like something like Number Muncher might have kind of number two prominence. I think like San Diego
Math Blaster, yeah
Math Blaster is really up there.
Uh-huh.
Number Muncher, Math Blaster, and stuff like that. Carmen San Diego felt like a more advanced form of edutainment game to me.
Yes.
This could have to do with my age though too. Like by the time this came out, you know, near the later entries of I guess it was like when the first one came out, definitely would have been in the pocket. Like this is a long running series, so
yeah,
who knows. But I can imagine some people not familiar with Carmen Sandiego the game for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, it just TV is going to be more common. Lots of people watch PBS. This game show is on PBS, and you know, if you just sang the first three notes of this to somebody who's about 30, they would probably finish the song in its entirety.
In general,
yeah.
That's like, a code word. Yeah, but I mean, the game, like, not everyone has played the game.
Right, right.
I guess my point, and it's a real big deal in the world of edutainment.
Yes.
Things. So the TV show we're talking about, before we kind of get into, I mean, I guess we should talk a little bit about the game.
We should,
the computer game. So this is actually the game show is actually a remarkably good adaptation of the computer game.
Mm-hmm.
The computer game started out, the very first entry, Carmen Sandiego was just one of many criminals.
Mm-hmm.
She was just kind of the breakout star
and
leader, but there was just like a bunch of criminals. And I didn't know this until I was doing research for the show. Did you know that the first releases of Carmen Sandiego, the computer game, just came with a world almanac?
No, I like did
the
not.
The current world almanac.
That's
like how great. Cute is that?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I just, God, I love edutainment.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, this entire thing from front to back is absurdly wholesome.
Yes,
from conception all the way up to the very last word that we say. Like, this is all going to be very, very constructive, positive, edifying.
Yep, as a show for sure. So like the version of the computer game is almost, because you have that world almanac, it's almost like it's the same kind of similar structure to the game show, not exactly, but kind of similar structure to the game show, but it's almost just like a guided learning experience.
Yeah.
Like it's almost just randomly directing you to look up stuff in the almanac until eventually you have some of these factoids memorized and understand, you know, stuff about these other countries.
Yes. The conceit is that you are an agent who is working for the Acme Detective Agency, trying to hunt down agents of this kind of Guild of Calamitous Intent, Vile, is what it's called. And, you know, you go to a city and you see like a list of the connecting flights, like where it could go. And you go to these different places and they say, oh, you go to the bank and like, yes, I saw her changing her money for francs. And then, you know, just other clues like that. And then you're just guessing which of the three cities that, you know, are available you can go to get more clues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. So it's broadly like geography and a little bit of history, world culture kind of stuff.
Yep. Like a little bit of everything. It's not strictly a geography game.
Right.
And that's like something that I kind of forgot. I always thought of this as just like a geography game, and that's not really the case.
Yeah.
This is the initial game. This is the one that these things are based on, even though later Carmen Sandiego would go through time, space, North Dakota, like all the places.
Yeah.
So the eventually Carmen Sandiego would get up some additional bullshits.
Yeah, it always bugged me that it was where in time is Carmen Sandiego, and very clearly it should be when in time is Carmen Sandiego.
Mm. She can be both.
Mm, okay, yeah.
That's like right now we are at a place in time.
That's yeah.
You know, we're at a where in time.
Yeah.
When in time also makes sense. I think that, but also if I remember that game, which I didn't, that one came a little bit later. I didn't play very much of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the where is super important to that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's not like just like, oh, I'm in this year. It's like, I'm in ancient Greece.
Yes.
You know, so it is more about the place, but I get your point.
Yeah. No, I'm just throwing grammar nerd on top of history and geography nerd. You know,
yeah, different kind of edutainment.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, like
grammar pedant muncher, like whatever, you know.
Yeah,
and it's just one muncher that goes around munching on the other munchers when they get things wrong. It's like Pac-Man versus.
I was only vaguely angry at the universe. I wasn't correcting any one individual person.
No, I know. Just imagining the edutainment game that might lead to such.
Okay, yes. This was all kinds of my shit. Like, when we would go to the main branch of our library, they had, you know, Macs out, and I would play Carmen San Diego Deluxe when I got frustrated with Prince of Persia.
Yeah, the Broderbund classics.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them. For some reason, yeah, Broderbund like had a big lock on that whole elementary school.
I know, market. Right?
Most of my playing computer games that were edutainment based computer games was when I was in middle school, and Carmen Sandiego was a part of it, but me and my friends mostly played Number Muncher and Oregon Trail.
Yes.
Primarily, we did play some Carmen Sandiego, and then once I got to a little bit older and there was a computer lab, people were taking, Wolfenstein from home.
Yes.
And installing them on them, and then we just, like, played Wolfenstein instead.
Obviously.
You know?
Yeah.
It was no longer about being educated at mm-hmm. all. You're just getting educated on the history of World War II.
Right.
Through BJ Blaskowitz. I did play a good amount of this. I watched an obscene amount of the TV show, though.
Oh, holy shit.
Every day.
It was
day.
Always on, like, right after school.
Yep. Yeah, 5 o'clock. Something to real quick, too, before we move off Broderbund, just because I have all my tabs open.
Uh-huh.
I just found this out that Broderbund has a game called Captain Goodnight and the Islands of Fear.
What?
Which is fucking awesome and a good band name. Like, I love this. Captain Goodnight.
Okay.
Captain Goodnight and the Islands of Fear is a 1985 action game by Broderbund.
That is really good.
Yeah, I love it. Like, I'm just like, that phrase, like, set of words, I was like, uh-huh. this is the good shit.
Oh, it's extremely blessed. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Good job, Broderbund.
Yeah.
Yep. Just Captain Goodnight. That's great.
Yep.
So I watched a lot of the show. It came on every day. Mm-hmm. My friend Austin would come over after school and we would watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of early on, and then eventually, like, would move on to watching Simpsons at that time slot. Like, I remember it was on at 5, and that was turned out to be a very hotly contested time slot once the Simpsons kind of syndication started.
Oh, of course. Yeah, and Simpsons is going to win, obviously, by default. The Carmen Sandiego was always a little bit unique among quiz shows aimed at kids for me, because it was primarily a way to learn by watching the kids either get it right or mess up. Like, mm-hmm. I very rarely actually, like, it just intrinsically knew the answers to the questions that were out there, but I was, like, really hungry to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know
any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, when I was playing along with the episode we watched, and mm-hmm. I for this kids show, like, you know, like, a little less than half maybe of these things, like, yeah. Sometimes there'd be a real slam dunk clue in there.
Uh-huh.
They would give you up, but every once in a while
you quote, like, accidentally picked an episode that is mostly about Portland. So
it's totally an accident, because it doesn't turn into Portland until at the end.
Right.
That's where she ends up. So I was just clicking around. A bunch of these are on YouTube, because I told you I watched another one this morning.
Right.
But the big problem is they're all, like, shitty, antenna TV rips.
Yeah. So, like, VHS tapes of antenna TV digitized poorly. Yeah,
the sound is very bad.
Yes.
So I was literally just clicking around them until I found one where I could make out the words better.
Mm-hmm.
And that one just happened to end in Portland, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Even though there are no, like, real geography questions about Portland, it's all during that chase section,
right?
Like,
right.
Memory match part of it, or not the chase. That's not the chase. That's the end.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't know a lot of this stuff. And mm-hmm. then the final segment is a nightmare, which we'll talk about. Carmen Sandiego did a bunch of stuff in the games this TV show is based on. This is specifically the world where in the world version of it. She went through time. She did math problems. She did everything.
Yeah, yeah.
This is based on a very specific entry in the game series where Carmen Sandiego, who is a master thief, her and her coterie of idiots go through the world and steal things, like, very small from, like you said, George mm-hmm. Washington's teeth, two quarries.
Right. And arenas, yep.
Yeah, arenas. Which literally happens.
Yep. So, and it is your job, not just to find out where they are, but to kind of, like, go on this worldwide chase with this really cool, like, Dick Tracy Cold War spy aesthetic.
All this theming stuff is so fucking good.
It's so good.
Like, yeah, I want to live in the set for the show so badly.
Yes.
So the genesis of the show, like, we'll just talk about the set here in a moment. Like, the genesis of it, came because there was a study. And this is, I guarantee, still absolutely true.
Oh, 100%.
The world needs a Carmen Sandiego now.
Yeah.
That American kids, including this American kid, 38-year-old kid, Gary Butterfield,
yeah,
knows jack shit about geography.
Right, right.
Like, kids couldn't find the USSR on the map at the time. Kids couldn't find the, you know,
the biggest country or the Pacific Ocean, the biggest ocean.
Yeah. The biggest ocean, like just couldn't name them.
Right.
And it's like, people were just like, this is fucked up. Like, we have to do this. And that element of like service that runs through this whole thing, you know, of like good hearted service to a greater good is like really, really, gives me positive feelings towards this. Like,
yeah,
it feels like the genesis of this was to educate and kind of help with this, this almost like not crisis, but this, this just kind of sad fact.
That's, I mean,
to correct this sad fact.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty embarrassing. Right. And you know, just, it sucks to not be aware of the world at large around you, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should do a game show. That's for the fact that public, school teachers have to buy their own supplies.
Yes.
Like let's do all the national embarrassments and make aware. Like, where in my fucking endocrine system is Carmen San Diego, and why is my medication not paid for that stuff? You know.
Yep. But so just the constructiveness of this, the positivity of it, I think that goes along with the fact that it is really, really information dense. Pretty much, like, you know, but both of these things that we're going to talk about, they are full of facts. Right.
Yeah.
Like, they will say the name of a thing and then give the context for it and give like either why this is important or tell you something kind of cool about it, but not in the way that like talks down to you, you know?
And that is the emphasis, like so much so that they repeat them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if this were a game show first and an education product second, when they're kind of doing the narrative that has the clues, the host wouldn't just repeat them.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very much like, hey, this is the important stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like a good teacher might do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like try to get you hooked, but then also just be like, this is the take. This is what's going to be on the test.
Yeah.
In, you know, a cynical way, but also this is the important kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of a narrative based quiz show.
I can't think of anything else like this where the whole first round is present, like everything connects. It's not just a list of questions. Like, there are new people coming in, new characters, like just, it is presented as a story in the kids at their little podiums are asked to kind of fill in these details.
Yep. And it's like they're role playing
in
it as well. Like, they are part of, it's like an interactive theater thing almost, you know. It's not quite that far, but like, to be the kid, like, you get, when you join this kid, like, it, you know, you're Acme agents, little gumshoes, and you get to dress as them. You dress as these like awesome, you know, 1920s detective Call of Cthulhu investigator outfits.
We're in the cosmos. We're in the dreamlands as Carmen San Diego.
We're in the dreamlands as Carmen. I'm pretty into that. Yeah. That's actually a very funny idea for like a one-off Call of Cthulhu campaign that I should do, because I don't think anyone in my game group play or listens to this show. So that would be a really phenomenal idea. So like, it's down to the set design and stuff. So it's not just, you know, the chief and the host, and Rockapella, which we're going to spend about 40 minutes on Rockapella.
Yeah.
Not just that, but also like this back alley that they come in through before they go into the game, the host place proper, like all the set design.
Mm-hmm.
This was shot, it's in City Hall in New York, I think.
What?
Something like that. I saw this, like, where are my fucking,
I thought camps? It was out of like Pittsburgh or something, like all that PBS stuff was.
Where's that? You vamp for a second while I look this up.
Yeah, I'll vamp. It's great. Like, you know, like the set is done very well. They cut to the audience, which is all full of kids. And like, even the studio like seems kind of small and intimate, but like the set itself is almost like something out of a film noir or something. Like it looks like a shitty detective's office.
Yeah. I don't know where I got City Hall, but it was shot in New York City. It's taped in New York City at Lifetime Studios.
Okay.
I think I might have been reading two things at once, which is the kind of thing that, I should have had a game show teach me not to do.
Right.
Because it's a good way to repeat misinformation.
Well, you got two eyes. Like,
yeah, I got two eyes. Yeah, I'm the anti-Carmen San Diego going around spreading dumb facts and whatness. You know?
Yep.
It was shot in this really, really great little, like, again, kind of kids cartoon version of a noir.
Yeah.
You know, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love.
Yeah.
There's a host named Greg Lee.
Yeah. Can take or leave Greg.
Yep. He's fine.
Yep.
He's a little bit like Uncle Joey from Full House as far as his body shape and face.
He's got strong Joey energy. Yeah.
Yep. Big Joey energy. Big Uncle Joey energy. and he's fine. He keeps it moving. I feel like is his job.
Yeah. Yeah.
you know, he's not like, he's not really there necessarily to have as much fun. Like, he keeps it lighthearted and good. Like, mm-hmm. I like him, but yeah. he's not the star or anything.
No,
he gives clues. He is the person, the point person for any of, they have like an open door policy. So any vagrants that want to walk in and like chat to these kids, like he gets to kind of bounce them. You know?
Any splinter cell off of the Rockapella collective.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like any of those guys who want to come in and get a little bit of extra, you know, money from the union, a little more SAG bucks.
I need some SAG bucks because my ex-wife is after bucks. My money.
Give me some SAG bucks.
I got a speaking
line this episode.
So he kind of hangs out and does that. There are the kids, and they get their own little intro where they get to be like talking on a phone or writing in a notepad or something. Super cool.
Uh-huh.
They are awesome nerds.
Yes.
I want great success for all of them. They are like such dweebs. I just love them. And then, the chief, man.
The chief. Yep. Lynn, Thigpen, I think.
Thigpen. Yep. Who was, like a Broadway, a minor actress on the screen, but also like a Broadway,
mm-hmm.
Actress. One of the episode I watched this morning dealt with stealing the Tony Awards.
Oh, nice.
Or the theater the Tony Awards were presented in, or first presented in.
Right.
Double Trouble stole them. Because I wanted to watch one Double Trouble. They were my favorite as a kid.
Right.
She was like, you know, your chief dabbled in musical theater. And then they showed Lynn Thigpen, like, one of her performances.
Oh, that's awesome.
From when she, and it was, it, you know, and she pretended like it was in character. I think it was really great. Right. And the chief is a classy and beautiful woman.
She has a tremendous amount of presence.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, just amazing voice, amazing, just like very, very good face acting. You know what she's like? She's like a lady version of Tim Curry to me.
Like, okay.
Has kind of has like Tim Curry facial features a little bit in just the expressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But like a version that I would like to either have adopt me or marry me. Or both. Like, me and the chief. I mean, she passed.
She very much passed. Yeah.
But like, if you know the seven chiefs you meet in heaven or whatever,
uh-huh.
like whatever my heaven wish. Like, I'm still banking it. I haven't decided. I have a big talk, but I haven't talked about it. You know, said what I was going to do with it. The you know, really, really considering just like a happy life with me and the chief.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like doing the New York Times crossword puzzle. Like going out to see plays,
mm-hmm.
like being one of those couples that like, instead of stocking up on groceries, you go out to the market and then just make food fresh that night, you know?
Yeah, yes.
Like every meal, like, oh, we're going to go to the market, you know?
Yeah, no,
you go there, you come home with a fucking baguette.
Yeah. You're going to try a paella from scratch and you're going to mess it up and you're going to order some Chinese takeout. You know, we'll get it next time. Don't worry.
Like, you know, dip the paella in my finger in it and then like, rub it on her nose and kind of laugh.
Okay, it's getting gross now. I'm sorry. Kind of
laughs. No, it's cute. Like, it's okay, still, this is all very pure. I don't know that we have sex if we just lay in bed and vibrate next to each other and carry both orgasm. I don't think there's any actual, like,
you're going to do it electric football style?
Yeah. I think that we just mind meld, you know, until it's just, we just bask in one another's presence. And me, it's basking in grace and style,
uh-huh.
and everything. And for her, it's like a real, you know, these are the fuckwits at the bottom of the Titanic. You know, like, I'm down in the engine room getting dirty podcaster energy, and that maybe that gets her off, you know?
No, you're not even in the engine room. You're like, just, you're there for ballast.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in storage. I'm being shipped like a fucking vampire. And she's just kind of into that because she spent her whole life on Broadway just being like the classiest woman I can think of.
Uh-huh.
You know, the picture of class. And maybe she wants to get a little dirty now that she's in heaven, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Gumshoe, I want to find out if you can find the G-spot.
The G-spot. It's because Rockapella would be part of this.
Oh, of course.
Like, hey, honey. Hey, did you pay the Xfinity bill?
The bill.
Yeah, I extremely into the chief. I love her.
Yeah, she is very good. And I don't know, just to be parodies of ourselves, having two women of color be your effective leads in a kid show.
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally rad. Like, yeah, like super, super awesome. Like, mm-hmm. definitely was meaningful to me as a kid watching this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I was 11 and in DeKalb, Illinois, mm-hmm. not a lot of black people in DeKalb, Illinois.
Right.
You know, like I'd see them on TV and stuff, but mm-hmm. that was what passed for exposure at all.
Right.
You know, in my shitty hometown. So like, you know, it was cool, you know, and just to have just be like so gentle and just like very, you know, just very wholesome, mm-hmm. like as a portrayal, like really good portrayal. Like there's yeah. no sensationalism, you know.
No, no.
So love it. Absolutely adore her.
Yes.
Also,
also absolutely adored.
Yeah. Rockefeller.
So
ooh, that's a fun portmanteau.
Yep. So Rockefeller is the a cappella group that provides the theme song, but also does the incidental music and kind of acts as, I don't know, like the Greek chorus almost.
Yeah. Like, they're the house band.
Yeah, like in the classical theater sense, they are the Proteans. Like they exist there to meld into different roles for the skits.
If this were Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, they'd be the Geek Chorus, which is an actual thing in Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So this is five fellas, fun-loving dudes, who do a cappella music.
Yes.
Which, like, you know, no offense to any a cappella fans out there, it's about the dorkiest fucking thing that exists on Earth.
Absolutely. And it's, like, it is like the textbook thing that is fun to do, but nobody should ever watch it or consume it.
I've said this before, but I always just feel like, you know, bands have harmonies. Like,
uh-huh.
None of you guys know how to play an instrument. Get two or three of you guys, get some people who do know how to play an instrument and make like a polyphonic spree kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get those fucking harmonies in there. Be Bell, you know, be Sufjan Stevens and take the Twee World by Storm. Like, bands have harmonies too. You don't have to do like covers of Stand By Me, you know, just like hanging around looking each other in the eye. Like, a cappella groups constantly side eye one another.
Uh-huh.
Like, well, you know, they kind of like look over to like,
I mean, that's how you stay in time because there's not a conductor. Please.
It makes it look like everyone like just like told a dirty joke a
little bit,
like after they do it, and they want to just be like, you hearing this? Like, we're doing it guys
yeah.
And
it's like how else are you going to like stay in time with each other?
Well,
you,
I mean, like, there's a guy doing the drums.
Well, like, yeah,
I
imagine, but not in every a cappella group.
Literal drums, but there's almost always a beatboxer or there's the bass. Like, there's a rhythm section in a cappella.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
I imagine that's how you stay in time.
But no, just, you know, the body language is a part of it. In case the listener can't tell, I've done this. I've done like solo ensemble at the state level a cappella stuff in high school. I didn't do it in college, but you know, watching each other is a part of it.
When improv is too dorky and white. It's time to join a cappella.
It was fun. I made a lot of good friends.
I'm sure it's fun. It's just, I think, you know, as professional video game podcaster, I think it is the dorkiest thing I can think of. Like, it is, I'm sure it's fun. And I enjoy the sounds of a cappella. Like,
you sent me a video that was just a skosh too far, which was them doing House of the Rising Sun
in a weird like golden flesh castle or something. Yeah.
Like, I described it as being inside the candle from the Black Star video.
Like, where are they? And are the breakout star, which we're going to talk about in a minute because he requires some real attention.
Yes.
Has like a mullet that ends in cornrows.
Uh-huh.
Like, at the end. And it is really special. Like, it's really, really something. Yeah. But I will say, for as much as this is like the dorkiest possible thing you can do,
mm-hmm.
it is a huge part of the success of the show. It's like one of the most memorable things, if not the most memorable thing.
Oh yeah.
About this show. Like, it was just huge. Like, it is one of the catchiest theme songs of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, up there with like DuckTales.
Yes.
You know, and shit like that. Like, it is so fucking catchy.
The sound cues, even, that they provide, the warrant.
Yeah, yeah.
so much of the sound design is done a cappella by these dudes. And, yep. like, from a jingle perspective or, like, a sonic branding perspective, it's fucking genius that I don't think has been, like, repeated.
No, no, it is. I mean, because if you did it now, like, it would be very, it'd feel a little bit dated.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like, because it is definitely like, I feel like a cappella, as much as that never went away,
right,
it is very much of its time as like a 90s kind of novelty thing, largely because of these guys, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, but nobody has even come, you know, you end up with like Jimmy Fallon that has, you know, The Roots,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And that's a great house band, but it doesn't have this. The closest thing I can actually think to this is the County Bang Bang TV show with Reggie Watts.
Oh yeah.
As the musical presence to do like make up songs and do little stings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is really similar energy to this.
Yeah.
Like Reggie Watts is the 21st century rockapella.
Yeah.
You know, rockapella, like I went down and this is, the second kind of rockapella hole I went down, because when I was 11 and stuff, me and my friends all love this stuff, non-ironically. Uh-huh. And then we became teenage irony fucks and we got the internet.
Right.
And I remember the specific genesis of me looking up the specific, guy in rockapella, was we were playing, Daytona USA.
Okay.
And listening to, Sky High. And we're like, is this the rockapella guy? And we wanted to look it up.
Yeah,
like that. Blue skies. Like, and I was like, this is the rockapella guy. It's not. But I was sure that it was, like, me and my friend were. So we went online to check it out as an online fact thing. And they were like, oh, the rockapella guy, the main guy, his name's Sean Altman. And then we went to Sean Altman's website at the time, which has not changed since I looked this up in like 1997. No.
The first item in the nav is still sitemap in 2019.
Yes.
So
this is one of the all time greatest websites.
joke. SeanAltman.com.
Yeah, we absolutely, like, with Wikipedia and Google.
Frankie Yack. You're throwing Frankie Yack up there? Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the greatest websites. Like, so every, you navigate through the site, through sitemap, what's new, sure. Sean Giggs, one word, a little weird.
Okay.
Sean Anatomy, Sean Discs, Sean Talk, Sean Picks, Sean Songs, Sean Press, all one word, Sean Store. And it's Subscribe, not Sean Scribe. In my head, I had turned it into Sean Scribe.
Right.
From when I was a kid. But you've got all these things. There's lots of little Sean puns.
Right.
His name. And every single page you go to has a different picture of him laying down on top of the little nav bar.
In different clothing.
The Sean Anatomy one's really good, where he's like laying down with a doll. It looks like he has a Robert Smith plush doll, and he's using the American flag as a blanket.
Yeah.
And this essentially is about his history, like his life when he was a kid. Seanarchy.
All of these puns, all these portmanteaus, Sean is doing a very good job of convincing me that he pronounces his name Shan.
Yeah.
Seanarchy, down here. Yeah. We've got Shanthems. But then he's also got Shanecdotes.
Yeah,
Sean songs. That's Swan songs. It's not Swan songs.
He's a versatile man.
Okay.
One of these headings is just Boy Sean. Yes, I'm interested in finding a place online to learn about Boy Sean. Teen Sean, Boy Sean, Mr. Rockapella, Seanarchy. So he quit. Like, he's the guy who quit Rockapella. Rockapella continued without him.
Oh, yeah.
Actually. My creative ego muse hijacked my heart and ran amok with my brain and wallet and heart in hot pursuit. So he went and started. So Sean Thumbs, Anecdotes again, Seanurisms, we continue. He's got a bunch of records. The cover for Seanemonium, which is like a photorealistic drawing of a parrot, but with a human Sean head on it. And the just Sean Altman one where he is a sperm.
Right.
One over and one up. How did we miss this one yesterday?
We did a whole episode in text on Slack.
Yeah, this is Alt.mania is the name of this album.
Okay.
The back cover is a pregnant woman who is giving birth to a baby, or has a baby. It's a cutaway. God, where it has a baby with his adult head on it. And then the cover is a bunch of sperms with Sean Altman's head, and one of them headbutting the egg with a smile on his face that cannot be described. this is, and then the nav bar on top is him doing a fucking crunch. This is the best fucking website I've ever seen in my life. Like, it is super good.
I'm looking at this here. Some of these song titles: "Dick About Me," "Unhappy Anniversary," "Too Old and Too Ugly."
Oh, buddy.
are you a man?
Oh, yeah. He's. Over, I'm gonna listen.
Then at the end, it's over and done.
Poor Sean. So there's Sean Talk. There's a big section of you'd think there'd be a big section of Q&A.
Uh-huh.
For you can ask whatever questions you want, and then there's an answers section that is two questions.
Yes.
Oh, this is interesting. I didn't know that so it looks like he was thanked on the They Might Be Giants side project Monopuff album.
Yes, he was.
Pretty interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, he used to play with one of their side projects.
Yeah.
That's pretty
I'm just sorry. One of these, Sean Corey and Response under Sean Talk. All right, man. Sean Demonium fucking rocks. You have the most unbelievable talent. I can't even describe it. Blah, blah, blah. Basically, fuck the haters. Dear Nate, keep the faith, dude. And soon my ubiquitous detractors will be scorched crispy by the blinding light of my success.
Is this a game fax?
Fuck them indeed. Hard and without lube.
Oh, Sean, no.
Nebraska sounds like a very cool place given the beef trade.
The beef trade.
It's probably not riddled. It's probably not riddled with pussy vegetarians either.
Oh, Sean, no. Don't like never Sean cannot call other people pussies. Like, dude, you like good God. You and other like-minded warriors for lyrical truth swallowed in power pop harmonies. I shall continue my quest for pop stardom, stalwart and brave, tally-ho my Midwestern friend. Jeez, Sean. There's a whole section for just pics.
The pics. Have you seen pics of him with his famous friends?
Famous friends, yeah.
I love the Bill Clinton one, which is just a picture of him standing in front of the presidential seal.
Yeah. The one for if anyone wants to see his dread or his cornrow mullet,
mm-hmm.
The one with him with Billy Joel is that haircut.
So bad.
So, and Billy Joel does not look happy.
No.
So you can go through songs. You can see some press about him. There's a store where you can buy his albums pretty much. There's nothing too specific about that.
Mm-hmm.
You can subscribe, not Sean Scribe, which is what I wanted there. And then but during Sean gigs, we find out that Sean makes house calls.
Yes.
Find out how to host a solo acoustic concert. So like this is theoretically a Duck Con goal.
Given his comments about pussy vegetarians, though, I think Sean might be a problematic face.
This is 1997, though. Like okay, I would have said that in 1997 too. I think it might be worth an exploratory, see if Sean has grown and changed. He might have. I tend to think of John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants as a good judge of character.
Okay.
Like,
okay,
I don't think it would be cool with him if he's still like this, but maybe he just got worse. You know, stardom just drove him more and more insane.
Right.
Free fee is negotiable depending on location. He lives in New York, so if it's New York, it's actually, you know, way mm-hmm. easier. He'll just go there. He has two sets, 35 to 40 minutes with a schmooze snack break in between. And you can make it open to the public or you can make it private.
Yeah.
Which is fine. What's in it for you? Great. You know, direct quote from a kind host of our successful concert. Pretzels, $5. Beer, $25. Cookie, $10. John Altman doing vocal warm-ups in my shower. Priceless. Can you imagine, Cole, like how much would you pay for a house where John Altman was always doing vocal warm-ups in the shower? How much would that add or subtract from the value of a home?
I mean, is he chained there?
He's always there. Okay. I don't know if he's chained there, but he is always there. Like he's part of the shower.
Yeah. No, I mean, it'd be hard to sleep, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Extremely. So like, but it's a house. Like, it's still the house. So like, what would you pay?
Doing vocal warmups in my shower. I just want to go through this forensically a little bit. Pretzels, $5. That's like a family size bag of pretzels.
Yeah. Right? Lots of pretzels.
Yeah. Yep. Beer, $25. Like 24 pack or something. Right. Yeah,
it depends on the size of the party.
Yeah. Cookies, $10. This realistically, he could have hired Sean to perform for six people.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
And just like have all six of them like put a cup up against the door while Sean is showering to listen to him sing vocal warm-ups.
Uh-huh. But one of these headings, sleepover. I may need a bed for the night, but rest assured, I'm a perfect house guest.
I love that so much.
I'm worried that Sean would try to establish squatter rights. I got my A's messed up.
Squatter, well, you're that's the Sean spirit.
Yeah, he's going to establish squatter's rights.
Seaner's rights. You're going to a Seanlish. I would have a hard time like once you invite Sean into your home. Like I'm just imagining like if we did this, like we talked about getting Buffo for like a Duck Con,
right?
And I think during the time when we're just hanging out setting up and Buffo is there,
mm-hmm.
like, I feel very good that, like, we would be in such deference to Buffo that, like, it would be a good time. Like,
yeah.
He's getting up there in age. Like, we'd get him drinks.
Yeah, I'd help him, you know.
Yeah, we'd help him out. We'd be like, Evan, do you need, like, a rest or whatever? You can go to my, you know, I haven't slept in the bed yet. You can take a nap in my room if you need to. Like, you know, anything you want, Mr. Buffo. Sean, I imagine us just kind of trying to work and him just kind of hanging around and making jokes and offering up anecdotes unbidden. It'd be like the human persona of like the nobody colon and then space and then Sean, you know, sings the Animaniac State song. Like, fucking A, dude. Like he's an amazing specimen. He's really something. The rest of the guys seem pretty with it, even though, and this, I just wanted to, while we were doing our tight, you know, our preparation for this, I want to get my dig, is that one of them looks like a less manly version of David Spade.
It's remarkable. And I think he's been with the band for the longest.
Yeah, he's been there for quite a long. If you think, and so they had a second hit, which they performed on Carmen Sandiego, which is how I knew it. They have a song called Zombie Jamboree.
Ah, shit. I meant to listen to that.
It's like a Harry Belafonte style, like Beetlejuice kind of thing almost.
Yeah.
But it begins with this long intro from the bass guy. And like the bass guy comes up, he's like, "There's an island." And when I watched them do it live, everyone in the audience was like treating the word island like it was a fun running joke. Okay. Like everyone, he's just like, "And on this," and then he'd go, "Island." And everyone all at the same time would go, "Island." And I was just like, "What? You guys are just all cheering for island?" Like that's a pretty weird thing. It turns out it's an island. It's Manhattan. They're talking about New York and kind of youth culture. It's very similar to the Tom Petty song Zombie Zoo, actually.
Oh, huh.
Which is also taking youth culture, like dance culture, and comparing the people to zombies.
Huh.
Something in the water at that time. But it's a catchy number, like, you know, of course.
Huh.
Yeah. They're very special. I love them. Oh, and the bass guy has gigantic fucking hands. It's the meatiest mitts I've ever seen in my life.
So I saw them, you know, just in the episode. I thought that it was like a thing. I thought he had like gloves on or fake hands doing like a Buster Bluth kind of deal. Guy just straight up has everlong hands.
Yeah, he has big old poofy mitts. Like when you look at him in other things, like he's just got like big hands. And he's got that super deep voice, and he has this weird masculinity elemental. You know, like all of these Sean songs about what it is to be a man are all because he grew up in the shadow of that fucking bass dude hog. Like every time they went to the group trough to do a rock cappella pee, you know, like it was every single time. It was like, "Move over, boys! Like I got girth," and everyone just felt like shit.
Yeah,
there's literally no way the bass guy did not just like absolutely emasculate the rest of the dudes in rock cappella.
Yeah, bass guy slays. Yeah,
bass guy slays. Fucking mountains of trim. So that's rock cappella. If you haven't listened to rock cappella in a while, I recommend it as a YouTube search because it's a little cringy, but it's also just really pure.
Yeah,
like similar to this.
Jesus Christ, I need to close these tabs because I'm looking at his soon to be famous Sean friends motized. What
Sean motized.
Which is crazy because when you look at his gigs, like he has some listed for 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just doesn't update his website anymore.
Yeah, weird. No. Background research. I'm gonna try and find Sean on Twitter.
Oh yeah, yeah. I would if he played in Portland, and it was like $12. I would that would be a hell of a Duck Feed Presents. I would do a trip report 1000%.
Yeah, singer songwriter, father of modern acapella, Carmen Sandiego theme songwriter, rockapella founder. Yeah. Cool. So he's there. One of his tweets is, "Where in the world is my bruised cheek drum?" And it's a video of him looking old. Yeah. So that's the thing.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be like old guy doing music.
Yes. Oh, there was a Netflix series
of Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah, there's a Netflix series coming up.
Oh, that's well, maybe like that might be good.
Yeah.
Like we'll have to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. Let's talk about what happens in this game show.
Yes, because we didn't break down the different segments that they do, but it's very, oh, yeah, you know, it's formulaic like a kid's show ought to be.
Yeah, yeah. The episode we watched is called Give Me Back My Wig. Yep. What happened is Vic the Slick was last seen in London, and he stole all the barrister wigs.
Yes.
So we learn a lot about barristers and their wigs.
Right. And the judges and the history that a lot of that stuff went away. But now, you know, however uncomfortable or unsanitary it is, they still got those wigs. So Vic's doing them a favor, and Acme is trying to reassert the status quo, like all cops. So, but we have three competitors, Noel, Clayton, and Kristen. Yeah. And we get their bios of the sports that they like to play.
It's not Noel, it's Noel.
Oh, yeah. Noel. Sorry.
Yes.
We get the bio of the sports they like to play, where they've been on vacation, and where they would like to go.
Yep. I watched the one I watched today. They were all collectors. So Greg was like, what do you collect? And the first lady, it was like, they were a little, you know, little girl, you know, kid, was like, I collect teddy bears. And he's like, and I understand you have an unusual ritual for them. And she puts them all in her room. Or puts half of them in a room. When they get dusty, those ones go in a bag and the other set come out. And then Greg says, I understand none of them have names. And she goes, yep. And then he moves on.
Oh.
Like, it's very haunted. Very weird.
That is extremely haunted. Oh, no.
And then the second kid collected pennies and has one penny that's worth $20,000. And everyone, because that's still big money for fucking PBS, you know, they're not like, we'll talk about the prizes they win. But like, you know, everyone's just kind of like, oh shit, this is the richest person in the room. Like, you know, Rockefeller wishes they had $20,000.
That solves a lot of problems for old Sean.
So these guys just all play sports.
And then the funny thing about getting these kids in any of these shows, they have kids, like, yeah, you know, you don't screen them for screen presence, right? Right. Yeah. So like all of them are like mumbling, and, like not making eye contact with anybody because they're like fucking mumbling kids. Robots is
a lot of them. Like I felt like they probably got a lot of instruction about like not gloating or not like reacting when they win or lose.
Yeah.
You know, like one girl in the episode we watched got a question wrong and actually kind of like, you know, let her face fall a little bit, you know, but it feels like they were trained to just kind of like take it as it comes.
Yes.
You know, almost. Mm-hmm. Vic the Slick was never my favorite henchman. Like if I had actually done research and picked one, not for Portland, I would have picked one with Double Trouble. Double Trouble was my favorite.
Yeah.
He's a twin. They both talk like two Jack Nicholsons. It's like if Jack Nicholson had a twin and both of them walked around doing this like all the time. Like it was there. Double Trouble is extremely good.
Yes.
Vic the Slick is okay.
Yeah. Aesthetically, so all these villains are presented as like animations over top of it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's about 2 hours of total animation for the series. Mm-hmm. Most of it is them walking and stealing something.
Yes.
You know, and then talking. So the kind of this first section where they're doing the clues are coming in through different kind of myriad ways.
Yes.
Sometimes Greg just reads them, but sometimes like, you know, there's a banknote talked
and
told about that,
yep.
You know,
in this case, Bite and Scratch, a cartoon, cat and dog come in and rap. And I could not understand a goddamn word they said.
Bite and Scratch are extremely difficult to understand, but it's good that Greg then repeats the clues, you know, it's a Gulf state, it's rich in oil. You know, things like that.
Right.
And we're kind of just like tracking a series, you know, a little path across the world that Vic the Slick is going through. There's a character named Scott who shows up here.
He's one of the Rockapella folks.
One of the Rockapellas who is a running character who is often like a corpse.
Right. And so in this whimsical show about stealing stadiums, why don't we have these three kids solve a murder?
Yeah. This is a locked room murder mystery. He comes through, he has a clue. He talks about, you know, it's Liberia. It has a lot of rain. It's the capital. But he can't, he starts to say it's time for the lightning round, but he gets struck by lightning. But then he is now like an unmoving corpse on the map for the rest of the episode. Well, the very end where they drag him off.
To where Greg asked the kid, what should we do with Scott? Like, oh, let's quickly drag him.
Yeah, the little kid, the winner, is like, let's drag this body off the stage or something like that. It's really amazing.
Okay, go and get me 7 pounds of lye.
Exactly. Get this kind of acid, not the other. You know, make sure you get this kind of tub. Then we get the segment that happens every episode. So the lightning round is just really quick clues, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The chief calls Greg into the office. They do a little comedy sketch every time this happens. This is a running part of the show, yeah. And it's a nice little highlight for the chief.
Yes, it's a highlight for the chief where she has to put up with Greg's bullshit.
Yeah, like, Greg does a little shtick. Like, yeah. Greg is big Joey, Uncle Joey energy. Shows up, and this whole thing is about her needing the files on the gumshoes.
Mm-hmm.
And him saying they're in the basement, and she's like, we don't have a basement. And then he does that thing like Austin Powers does.
Yes.
When he pretends to walk down to the basement in front of the chief's fucking desk, like ruthlessly gaslighting her. You know, but she doesn't see through it because she's the epitome of grace, you know.
Yeah.
And eventually she just kind of chews him out and finds through the documents the contest where kids, like, the show is weirdly stingy in the grand prizes but very generous in terms of like general prizes.
Yes.
Because as a kid, if you watch three episodes and you like write down the answers in three episodes in a row and send it in a postcard, you get a chance to win a t-shirt. So they're giving out like five t-shirts per, you know, this wasn't like a weekly show. This is a daily show.
Right, right.
It's on every day at five every weekday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're just giving out t-shirts by the truckload. And So pretty cool if you're one of those kids who got one of those t-shirts.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, good to participate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
For the next one, a regular thing that happens, they intercept a phone call, right?
Yep.
Between Carmen and Vic, has more clues. And then of course we get some good old fashioned anti-Italian sentiment talking about these wigs, and Carmen's like, nothing could stick in your hair, Vic.
Yeah. I don't know if that's, I mean, he's got super greasy mobster hair.
Okay.
I don't think it's necessarily anti-Italian. I think it's cause he's slick.
Okay.
He has slick back hair and stuff, but yeah, it is just a little dig. Carmen San Diego does not treat her workers very well.
No.
Yeah.
Yes. All the kids get it wrong. They thought that Cambodia had never been ruled by another nation when famously Thailand was on there. So fuck you.
Yeah, you idiots.
God.
You absolute clod. So the
there was a whole goddamn musical about it, Gary.
Yeah, they should have seen that. These kids didn't watch enough musicals. What kind of Poindexters are you? So we're back. We're now in America, which is nice because this is you know our time to shine as an audience.
Good comfort zone.
Yeah, I know this stuff. So the next is the state with the first woman governor. And there's a bunch of clues for this. All the kids get this wrong, and I'm really surprised.
Yeah,
most of them get this wrong, but it's like clearly Wyoming.
Right.
Idiots. And then we move on to a section called the chase, which is this rapid fire set of questions about U.S. states and capitals.
Yes. You know?
Before finally the end of round one, where they kind of do like a double Jeopardy
thing,
where they can risk a certain amount and they have a good song.
Yes.
And you find out where they're going. You choose what to risk based on what you know about that. So they are going to Oregon,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, that's where Vic the Slick is. So you bet based on how much you know about Oregon.
Right. So Noelle and Clayton, they go on.
Yep.
Whereas Kristen gets the. Oh my gosh.
The first consolation prize.
Yes. Which is actually like a cool package of, you know, geography stuff.
Yeah. It's great. It's a world almanac. It's a Carmen San Diego watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a t-shirt, you know, things that like you could use in your, you know, they frame it as like in your investigations.
Yes.
Like I want the childhood that this show suggests so badly.
Yep.
Like the, you know, just like going and like, you know, with magnifying glass and pretending to like, you know, learning, but pretending like I'm like investigating cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I want that so badly.
Yeah.
The second runner up thing is the same thing as, you know, that comes the next and the same thing, you know, same basic prize, just so we don't go over it. We also go to World Band Radio,
mm-hmm.
which I would have fucking ate that shit up.
Oh my God. Listening to like Radio Moscow. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's fucking cool. Like I'm sure we talked about this. Do you have a CB when you were a kid?
No, that the only CB that was ever in my family was like one that was in a car.
Okay, the crime CB or whatever.
Yeah.
I me and my friend Austin both got into CB radios for a little bit.
Oh, nice.
And we just like, we never talked to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like I am talking on a CB radio. It wasn't that thing. We just listened to conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Like we just tune into bands and listen to like truckers talk and stuff. And it was super cool.
I mean, did you hear anything? Did you hear anything colorful?
No. Mostly just like talking about like their lives and saying hi a lot, like introduction.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe if we had stuck with it longer, we would have got that.
Yeah. But, again, extremely wholesome, weirdly enough. I would have killed a man with my bare hands to get that basketball that has the globe on
it. Oh, yeah. The globe. Yeah. The world ball.
Yeah.
You know, which is what it is. It's a basketball that has a globe map on it.
Yes.
That you can also use in your investigations because it functions as a globe that you can shoot hoops for. She also, when she does that, when she gets the basketball, she throws it behind her head and sometimes makes the basket and sometimes doesn't. And the episode we watched, she did.
Yeah.
which is awesome.
It is very, very brave of them to have her do that take fresh every mm-hmm. time.
And she did it, and it looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Kristen, go home. You're gone forever now. Yeah. We're on to round two, which they get to by this weird little stock footage film festival of people driving in aquatic cars.
Yeah, they have to get there. I don't know if this is, you know, before this, we were just answering questions about places from the studio we're in. I don't know if this is really necessary, but they get there, and stock footage was going to have to be like, that's cheap.
Yes.
You know, that's always going to be something that, you know, Pee-wee's Playhouse, any kind of cartoon show is going to do some stock footage stuff.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. But this whole round is all about Portland, Oregon. And it's like a memory test. They are searching for Vic on this board of Portland landmarks. And, you know, you have to remember what is under which of these, because you have to find the loot, the warrant, and the crook. I'm sorry, the loot, the warrant, and the crook.
The crook. Yeah. In order. So it's just memory match, yes. But Greg gives you little factoids.
Yes.
About the locations, some of which exist now, still in Portland, some of which don't. The funniest one I was talking about you is that one of them is just Reed College, which is like our kind of like hippy dippy liberal arts college that's exclusively for like super rich kids.
It's your Antioch. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like, oh, Reed College. You know, okay. But a bunch of these, like another thing that like was here when I first moved here is the 24-hour Church of Elvis, which is a coin-operated like vending machine art installation thing that is no longer extant.
He's real coy about that. Like he says, yeah. Oh yeah, it's, you know, like it's not a museum, it's a machine, and then like the less said about it, the better. Or I won't go into detail. He made it sound like it was real smutty.
It's not. Like I don't think it still exists unless it got moved. It's no longer in the same place it was. It used to be over kind of by ground control.
Okay.
So that's no longer a thing. But and there is the world's smallest park here, which I have been to, which is this like tiny, tiny little like postage stamp, but it's considered a park.
Yes.
But it's cute. Mm-hmm. Or the nation's smallest park. But they go through and get them in order. The lady here, the Noelle, kind of sets up Clayton to win.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like Noelle discovers the actual things, but Clayton puts them in order.
Mm-hmm. And she's real dejected. Too.
Yeah, she feels like she should have won.
Yes.
And she might have done better in the third round because Clayton, spoiler, really fucking screws the pooch on this third round.
He biffs it. It was like when you tried to name all of the Mega Man villains.
It's like, or if I tried to do this. He did as well as I could. Like, no joke. Like I can't. I don't know what these, so we'll get to the third round.
I would murder at that today.
You think so?
Oh yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know, man. Like I'd want to see you do it. Cause I think just naming these things by the shape or like finding these things by the shape is extremely difficult.
Hmm.
In Asia even.
Yeah.
You think like the same one he would have done? You think you would have been able to get 8 of those in 45 seconds?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, I would want to see it. Like, not that I don't, you know, just because it's not because I don't believe that, you know, you would do well on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think the 40, it's very difficult.
Yeah. Well, so Clayton biffs it. And then Greg says, oh yeah, this is, you know, like this is the hardest one or something like, or I'd have the hardest time. Harder than Africa? Man,
Africa would be difficult.
I can't do Africa for shit.
I think that Africa has more like there's a bunch of big countries, you know, in Africa. So you just kind of have to name the, you know, what those are. There's many like small, like little wiggly numbers.
You get over by Sierra Leone Sierra Leone. It gets real bad.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they're probably fairly similar.
Yeah.
As far as like wiggliness potential,
mm-hmm.
You know, when Clayton wins, he gets to put Vic the Slick in jail by pulling a chain, which has to be the most satisfying thing in the fucking universe.
Yep. And
so Noelle wins the travel kit with the World Band Radio.
Yeah.
The chief, you know, sends her off. And I love how positive it again. The chief is just like, you know, you were instrumental. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have caught him.
Right. Right.
You know, in the magic circle that is this game, you are a fucking champ. You have nothing to be ashamed of.
Right. In fact, it's really weird that as we get closer to the crook, we're sending people home.
Yeah. Perhaps there's corruption on the force. Perhaps this is, yeah. So what I think is kind of a sad thing is, so you get to, early on, it was anywhere in the United States. Later, it became anywhere in North America you could mm-hmm. travel to.
Yeah.
They would give you a ticket to it. And that's your grand prize. I think it's kind of sad because you write down where you want to go, but it does not get revealed or anything unless you win.
Right.
So I was thinking about the dumpster behind the Carmen San Diego studio where it's just full of kids' dreams where they didn't get to go. Like, it's literally little kid handwriting, writing the place they most want to visit.
Hawaii.
And just a big fucking pile of them. You know, because, like, a lot of people failed this. Like, yeah. This show didn't have the budget to be giving out fucking trips left and right.
Right.
You know? So, like, this is specifically, like, I mean, people, maybe it's just me. Like, people listening can say how hard they think this is. I think it is very hard. And a lot of people failed it on the show.
Yes. And it's very stressful to watch them do it. So yeah. I was entranced with this because in my head, I thought this was far more technically, you know, sophisticated than it actually is. So what's happening is, on the studio floor, they've got a big map of a particular continent. Okay. And Greg is basically just naming a country. And the kid has to grab like this post kind of thing, right? And stand it on whatever country is called out. The countries are not labeled. In my head, I thought there were like electric sensors or something like that. I'm like, fuck you. No, there was a line producer who was just watching and pressing the yes or no button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get two tries, and if you don't get it, you have to put it back.
Yes.
And you have to get 8 of them in 45 seconds. They up that. It used to be 7 in the first season. So that's where I can tell they're kind of adjusting based on budget, it feels like.
Yes.
And that's just very difficult. Like 45 seconds to kind of run out and put them on these things. If you miss one of them, you know, where you have to kind of come back and you miss a clue and you have to go back. Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, 1/8 of your time gone, probably. So there's not very much margin for error. You're also conceptualizing, like you're looking at the map, not in a way that we look at maps.
Yes.
Like you're standing on it and just seeing like a bunch of different color abstract shapes and trying to remember your globe knowledge, you know, that you have as a kid. You don't know which continent you get.
Right.
For this, you know, imagine like, and again, probably projecting for me, I'd just be like, you know, come on, like, you know, Europe.
Oh yeah.
Like, I feel like I would have a pretty good chance of doing Europe.
Yeah.
In this, South America, Africa, Asia, no way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So South America would be second for me. Yeah. No, it's and when I was their age, like the fact that these kids get any of them at all is pretty good. Again, because given their peer group, most of them can't find the Soviet Union. Most kids today cannot find the Soviet Union. It doesn't appear on a map.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, no.
Well, they actually do after Clayton fucking screws the pooch on this. he only gets one right.
Right.
You know, and that's it. He gets his consolation prize, which is everything else, includes a portable CD player and some CDs from around the world, including Rockapella, which is, you know, hell yeah. and then they go out at the end, they look out, the camera pans out to the ceiling, and they point to it and go, do it, Rockapella, and then Rockapella come out and do it.
Yep.
And but they say, like, you know, all the geographic information in this was correct based at the time it was filmed.
Yes.
Because of stuff like the USSR. Yeah.
Yep, because maps are fluid in a real fascinating way.
Yeah, which makes geography a weird, thing on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Like the things to study.
Yep.
That's why this is good. That's not purely geography. So Rockapella does it. We learn all about, you know, viewers like you
of
that
course.
Support programming like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
Also, and I think it's sponsored by Toyota or something like that.
It is, yeah, Toyota. And then, but specifically, it's Carmen Sandiego's henchman or something like that. There's one where it's like, or no, that's the it's not the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's one of those PBS stalwarts.
Oh yeah.
Funds her criminal enterprises, it says specifically. Yeah. Which I just love. And then that's the end of the most like pure experience on earth that touched tons of children's lives and is just like amazingly good and a great adaptation, actually.
Oh, fantastic.
Like in many ways, a better game than the actual original computer game because it doesn't come with the answer key, you know, like the other one, which is neat, but it is just kind of like, it's an open book test.
Yes.
Yeah. This is just a regular test.
Yeah. And it's incredibly heightened too. Like, I can't even imagine being in those kids' shoes, just how distracting all of the Rockapella ghosts running around are. It's just incredibly good, incredibly entertaining, incredibly heightened.
So good stuff
on our two dimensions. Good product, yes. Also good adaptation, absolutely.
Yep, love it. Less successful is the cartoon.
Yes,
that came a lot later.
So Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego which is a very disappointing title. It does not have the scansion that that Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Cole.
Yes.
What about Where on Earth is Carmen Shandiego?
Carmen Shandiego.
Yeah, like, thoughts on that? Like, I was kind of surprised he didn't do that.
Yeah. No, if you look at Sean's Twitter, it is mostly him retweeting different remixes of the of the song.
Yeah. This is a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes.
Ran on Fox, 1994-1995. That is also, like, not the worst adaptation in the world. Right. Like, for, like, a cartoon. Like, this actually does a lot of nods towards the game.
And it's still really information dense.
Yes, it's just unpleasant.
Right.
Like, I don't think it's a bad adaptation. It's just, like, kind of oily.
Yeah.
Like it's just kind of greasy feeling to me. So the conceit of the show is it's a game. It's being played by an unseen player, which is presumed to be like you, the audience.
Yes.
Pretty much. Carmen Sandiego steals something very important, and the player controls two Acme agents, Ivy and Zach, to get it back. There are other Ivy Acme agents that can help out in other later episodes.
A whole rogues gallery of them. Like,
a whole rogues gallery from other countries. And is there any way that this is as racially sensitive as it needs to be?
No.
Like, do you think that Billy Running Bird, the Native American Acme agent, is treated with respect?
Ooh. You know, that, yeah.
Possibly, but I just... you know?
So, I mean, this is something from later in the outline, but it's, you know, something that probably should be raised is that Broderbund demanded a very high amount of control over this, specifically because they thought Fox, who aired this on Saturday mornings, they thought Fox would fuck it up by making it too violent. Like the rest of the game. So the fact that Broderbund like vetted all of the scripts probably gives it a higher than average chance, but average for the mid 90s is still pretty abhorrent. So who knows?
Yeah. And Broderbund in the 90s, perhaps, like when like the Rogues Gallery includes characters named like Clay Tandori. You know, it's pretty much Punch Out. Like
Clay Tandori.
You know, hello.
Oh, my name is Iron Oven. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, cool. You know, just it feels like a little bit Punch-Out-y.
A little bit, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
I didn't take a very close look at that list once I realized that, oh, yeah, we're probably going to only see one, and that's
it. Okay. Yeah, we only saw that. Well, this is the first episode is the one we're covering.
Yes.
And I'm glad that we didn't do this as its own episode because I didn't want to watch two episodes of this cartoon.
No.
It's pretty boring.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So each episode is a whirlwind tour of the world. You go to multiple different locations, you know, following this series of intricate clues left by Carmen, who is personified here. Like she is not really shown in the, you know, in the game show or even really in the game. But here she is like this example of a gentleman thief who is, you know, just kind of stealing for the sport of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a cat burglar, like she gives clues.
Yes.
You know, like she does it because she wants to be caught. She's the Riddler.
Right.
Pretty much. And we have Ivy and Zach, our two main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Carmen and then the chief. And that's the big problem with this is like, I'm not saying it needed to be like this beautiful, perfect, classic lady.
Right.
Like classic lady. But it doesn't have to be like Max Headroom for kids.
No, it doesn't have to be somebody doing a Robin Leach impersonation. It's real bad.
Off and on. Constantly. Roger, the guy who plays it is named Roger Bumpass. Roger Bumpass is the person who plays this. Also the person who does Squidward. It's Roger Bumpass. But Bumpass is the person who plays the chief and exceedingly annoying character. I do not like Bumpass.
Yeah, and it feels like it is somebody from the early VR age. You know, he's a digitized chief. I think chief is an acronym for something or other.
Yeah.
But like because he is computerized, he has a computerized head. He mostly speaks in computer puns, which does not
puns.
It does not support the thesis of the show.
It's a little bit like, can you ever think about how much harm Aladdin's the Genie did to like kids' entertainment? Or just like adding Robin Williams and energy to like a kid thing.
Oh, geez.
Like, you know, like a lot of what like Ace Ventura is like. Things like that kind of like manic kind of energy.
And here's the thing, you know, kids with energy and entertainment are kind of like governments with power. Once you give the government power, they don't tend to give it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just going to escalate. So Robin Williams came in, irresponsibly introduced the genie into the lexicon, and then all of a sudden we got this.
I hate that genie so much. There's no, like, as much as I would not go see the new Aladdin movie with somebody else's eyes, like, I think that there's no way that Will Smith is not an improvement on that fucking awful genie. Like, just, The critic parody of the genie in Aladdin is pretty much pretty accurate.
I forget what
this Robin Williams doing. It's just like Robin Williams just, you know, doing his whole, his shtick, the Tim and Eric version.
Black Preacher voice, huh? Again? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Robin Williams. Like, we get that, like, you have a lot that, like, you don't stop. You know, I suppose that if it is just like I'm driving a speedboat that is powered by words, you're the person who I want.
Right.
You know, it's like, you are the Micro Machine guy. He's the Fast and the Furious, like, Nitro I can add. It's just throw the Micro Machines guy in there. But, like, yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very sad. Like, not trying to speak ill of the dead. Right. I just don't think that whole him for kids is really fucking obnoxious.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the chief in this is very annoying. Mm-hmm. That kind of energy. So the episodes are fast paced. They have weird little mixed media interstitials that are either take place in the real world that are not animated, or just kind of like odd little changes in animation and pictures and stuff that give you.
It's like a Terry Gilliam kind of thing, a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And we said that they go all around the world. They're tied together by a theme.
Yes.
So it's like, yes, you go all around the world, but this one is about art.
Right.
You know, paintings.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And also about art is the fucking theme song for this, which is
we'll cut in its entirety right now. So we'll see you in 45 seconds.
Where on earth is Carmen Sandiego?
And we're back. I listened. I was like,
"Isn't that weird?"
That's a strange choice. Why did they compose that like an opera? And then you go look it up, and like, oh yeah, it's totally based on a Mozart opera. What are you doing?
Why did they do that, though?
I don't know.
Especially in the wake of the success of Rockapella. Like, I can imagine Rockapella, maybe, like, this is them at the height of their powers, you know, and they're not gonna cede to do a different theme song for this. Or, you know, they're just kind of over it. Like, we've moved past Rockapella. We're in the House of the Rising Sun phase of our career now.
Right.
You know, but the just choosing this, it's really unpleasant. It's like choosing Wendy in Maniac Mansion. it just sounds bad. Like, it's really unpleasant. You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like on my old my miraculous archaeology iPod that I put together or found. I have the old like 2011 release of You Don't Know Jack.
Oh God! Oh no, iPhones, Gary! No,
which is like it's extremely good. Like it's like that's just a good quiz game,
right?
But those little the numbers, like the question.
Yeah. Themes. No, that's what I'm oh God knowing about.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the question themes. You know, it's the same kind of like little genre piece of music.
Yes,
or piece on genre music or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
And like where all good shows go to die, this is now running on the Worship Network.
That's hilarious.
Mark of quality.
It's really weird because if you look at where Carmen Sandiego Media goes after its initial run, like it, you know, it was on public television and then it went to like PAX and then from there got even more religious themes.
Where do the good shows go when they die? They do go to heaven. It's rough stuff.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this episode. Let's move quick because it's not good.
Right.
This is the Stolen Smile.
Right.
Is what this is called. And we start off in the Netherlands. It's super spooky. I like that everyone's speaking their native language.
Yes.
It's not subtitled or anything. with Carmen Sandiego breaking into the Vincent Van Gogh Museum to steal just his eyes.
Yes. So she
like fucking Steven Root and get out. Like, she wants his eyes, man. Yep. Like it's a
And she, you know, like honestly, it probably would have been better if you stole the whole thing. Like you just cut up a priceless piece of art.
A lot of art gets defaced in this episode.
It's literally defaced.
Yeah.
You know, so the authorities rush in, but she zips away to her mega jet, apparently. But no, it turns out that she just zipped up a Carmen Sandiego sized dummy into it to sacrifice her mega jet.
Yep. The Carmen Sandiego real doll. Her budget's through the roof on this shit. So she's back in the museum getting away this time. We cut to the real world again, like, you know, not animated, where Carmen taunts us, the player, and we're doing a character select.
Right.
We're choosing our, you know, essentially our character for the show. The season, we choose Ivy, who is like a plucky lady detective.
Right.
Kind of like what's her head from Jurassic Park a little bit.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park, maybe.
I got a little bit of a Penny from Inspector Gadget kind of vibe.
There's too much Inspector Gadget in this whole thing. Like the way that the machines all kind of transform a little bit.
Yeah.
I've always thought that was really boring. Like I think Inspector Gadget just like literally eats ass. Like I think he's a garbage as a cartoon construct. Like I do not like Inspector Gadget.
I was happy they rebooted Inspector Gadget as Deus Ex Mankind Divided or Human Revolution or whatever.
That was a good choice. I like that version of it. Yeah. And I like it when they rebooted it with Matthew Broderick. that I'll stand for, but the cartoon,
right,
a bridge too far.
Yes. You weren't there for the voice talents of Don Adams?
He's fine, but it's not there's no jokes in it. Like it's too old-timey, and him like, I'll just use my extending hand.
Yeah,
like all the jokes are just like, what if his body stretched essentially?
Right,
like what if this thing stretched?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like you can get a little joke about the adult that thinks he knows what he's doing, but the kid that solves it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Actually, but that doesn't stretch a series.
No.
Like that's just not good enough.
Yeah.
I think. And there's too much Inspector Gadget kind of vibe in this whole show.
But yeah, but Ivy is competent, put together, voiced by Jennifer Hale, weirdly enough. Yeah. You know, the chief is there, and like we said, he's like he's all glam. He's got the slick back hair, doing a.
Actually, it's not slick back. He's got this like weird little like.
It's like a pompadour kind of. Yeah.
He looks like Egon from the Real Ghostbusters cartoon.
Oh yeah, that weird hair, the weird pastry hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. But she's doing his lifestyles of the rich and famous, and Ivy is resentful because the player, he doesn't just want one detective, he wants to bring in support, and so he goes and says, bring me a teen.
He chooses from the rest of them and gets Zach, and Zach is such a teen.
Zach is Ivy's little brother.
Very Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Yes,
kind of little character. You know, the shitty teen with an army jacket and a skateboard, just a real, you know, Bart Simpson kind of thing, but with no jokes.
Right.
And she doesn't want to work with him. He's like, hey, big sis. And she's like, don't call me that. You know, they do not want to work together. They do not get along.
Yeah.
But by the end of the episode, they will.
Kind of. Usually you look at this stuff in media, and it's like, in 15 years, you're going to be each other's best friends. You know that, right?
Yeah. In 15 minutes, they're going to be each other's best friends.
Okay. Yes.
Like, we're working on a much faster time scale than that.
Right.
But that is what they're going for.
Yes. But they don't just travel by megaplane. That is just for dummies, literally.
Yep.
What they do is they travel in something called the C5 corridor, which for a second made me think, like, are they going through a skeleton? Like, is this a spinal cord? What are you doing?
I don't know what the C5 corridor is exactly. while it's happening, the chief gives us little factoids about the Netherlands.
Yes. Yeah. And so we end up on a canal barge full of tulips. The only way they could have made it more Dutch is if that barge ran into a barge filled with wooden shoes.
Prostitution.
I went for the kid friendly version, but okay.
Huh. And they're chasing the little side villain of this episode, whose name Therese Klaes. Like tourist class.
Yeah.
You know. Who is this really grotesque little goblin?
Oh yeah.
Like he's got really exaggerated features, and he is the vile member that is concerned with art.
Yes.
Most.
Yeah.
I couldn't not the tell, most explicitly racist, but he is hard to look at.
I couldn't tell if his whole thing, aside from his accent, was supposed to be some kind of stereotype I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe.
Like knowing this show, like it, you know, seems like it, but yeah.
Yes.
So they go to the museum. The curator kind of explains some more history about Van Gogh, why the eyes might be valuable. And the chief cuts in with this stuff too.
Right.
You know, like it's everyone's here to learn. You know, these are the most emotional part of all his portraits, but like kids are learning about Van Gogh. That's right. Great.
Good.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And then while they're learning about Van Gogh, a more interesting thing shows up, a little Clockwork Carmen Sandiego.
Terrifying. They keep saying, I have the biggest nose, but I might be lying, like over and over. And I think it says it like three or four times before they actually like notice it and address it.
Right.
And like, just very normal to them.
Yeah.
But of course it explodes.
Right.
Cause it's a little kid toy. It doesn't kill them or anything. Mm-hmm. It's a clue about a big nose, but lying is lying. They had to go through this. At first I'm like, oh, big nose, but I might be lying. Like, oh, Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And they actually go through this. Like they cross-reference in the crime computer.
Yeah.
Like, and eventually they get the pun. It's a lot like Batman deciphering clues.
A little bit. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, like, what about Mount Rushmore? Like President Lincoln was our tallest president. So he probably had the biggest nose, but he was Honest Abe. Like just kind of going through that.
His face. And they do a real weird thing where his face, they're like, he was the tallest president at 6'8". His face on Mount Rushmore is as tall as 10 of our 6'8" tall athletes.
Oh, I mean, they could have just said as tall as 10 Lincolns. Why did they have to bring basketball players in?
I don't know, but they say how tall Lincoln is, and then they bring in little like cartoon basketball player. Like, what is this? It's a very weird, like, say, and also like as tall as 10, 6'8". Like when you can say exactly what the number is.
Right.
You know, there's like, I remember in high school, there was like a, based on that, like it was a Dark and Stormy Night contest to have the worst, you know, opening, lines in a novel thing, you know, that contest they have every year, like where you make the worst opening lines. We did a version of that in English class and it was very fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of them I remember that someone did where it's like, he was exactly as tall as a 6-foot tall tree or something like that. Like, which I think is funny.
The state is exactly the size as one Rhode Island. Oh, Rhode Island. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That one. Yeah. Yeah. So they think, you know, no nose, lion, Sphinx. It's the Sphinx.
Mm-hmm. But they get to the Sphinx and there's nothing there. In fact, there is no nose.
Yep, because somebody used it as target practice is what they guess. Mm-hmm. So the Sphinx lost its nose. But some henchmen show up.
Right.
And there's like a little bit of action. Like Zach can sabotage their plane.
Yeah. Those Zach people are definitely dead.
Genius. Yeah. Like a lot of henchmen die, Broderbund.
Right.
Zach is showing his, still waters run deep.
Right, right. So. He's just showing that he has it in him.
Yeah.
Yeah. They go and loot the henchmen's bodies. They've got some pesetas on them.
Yep.
You know, Spanish currency. And one of them says, let's go cave.
Yep. And he's like, well, what's that?
Mm.
So they, they're thinking, okay, like they find out at this point that another crime is reported that Carmen stole the nose from a portrait of Cervantes by Picasso. And the next, they say, okay, the next target's probably going to be the mouth.
Right.
Cave, mouth. They're trying to figure out what's the most famous smile of all time. And the girl's like, Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, like, he's so dreamy.
It's always hard to imagine, like, now that he's a leathery Muppet, like, if that was a thing that little kids might have been into at the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, thinking he was handsome.
Yep.
Instead of a weird, like, 5-foot-tall stunt Muppet he is now.
Oh, he's running. You know? Stop running.
Yeah, stop running.
What are you running from, Tom?
Yeah, I'm trying to prove that your body hasn't decayed. We know. So they're going to go they figure out the most famous smile. They go to Paris because of the Mona Lisa.
Yep. And they stop Therese at the Louvre, right?
Yep.
He's getting ready to cut the mouth off the Mona Lisa.
Yep.
They stop some henchmen by rolling them up in a carpet like they're getting ready to dispose of bodies for the mob.
They're definitely gonna throw them into the river.
Beanie Babies.
But Carmen Sandiego shows up and they're just a couple idiot kids.
Yeah.
So Carmen Sandiego locks them in a storeroom.
Right.
Where Zach tries to pick the lock to get out using a crown.
Right.
And it's really weird. Like he takes a crown, like a priceless artifact, and just starts jamming into the lock, trying to like pick it like an idiot.
Yeah.
They also, to try to get away, they pretend to be statues. And I was like, oh, this is dumb. This isn't gonna work. And then it didn't work. And then the characters call attention to it. And she's like, you idiot. Like the sister is like, you idiot. That wouldn't work. Why would statues be wearing this clothes? And he's like, you are modern clothing. And he's like, I'm sorry. And I'm like, this is so dumb.
It's not a joke.
Like at this point, like, so like, you know, I'm just watching it. And I'm just like, fuck you. Yeah. Fuck these kids.
Mm-hmm.
sucks.
So they do escape, and you know, Carmen has taken over the world's TV airwaves, right?
Yeah.
And she is broadcasting from inside a cave, and you can see these drawings of animals. And obviously it is, you know, the cave of Lascaux, right?
Yeah.
Of course, Lascaux cave. Yeah, Lascaux cave.
Yeah. Yep, yep. So they take the C5 teleporting tunnel to the cave. Zach's like, let's get them, let's attack directly. But Ivy says, no, we can turn the TV lights on these bats.
Yeah.
On the roof, and then the bats will come down and distract them, which will start a fire and will roast them all alive in this cave.
While destroying all of this,
art. Know,
tens of thousands of year old art.
Yeah. Yeah, Ivy ain't so good.
No, Ivy's got a real Laura Croft thing going.
But of course, Carmen, you know, starts leaving once bats show up.
Right, right.
And while this happened, she grabbed a canvas and left, but Zach...
No, it was Ivy.
Ivy switched it out.
Ivy did a little crude marker drawing of her and of her and Zach, and that's what Carmen got. So, good, I guess.
Yep. And then, and Carmen Sandiego is sad because she didn't get the real painting, and she won this round. She taunts the player.
Yep. And then the kid turns off the computer, and that is the end of the episode.
Yep. An uncommonly boring kids cartoon, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying I wanted more violence. Like, it's not like, oh, Broderbund really wussed it up. And I like the educational part of it, but just the style and presentation and kind of the charismaless characters.
Yeah.
Like, main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just kind of ruined this for me.
Yeah. There are lots of levers you can push that make it more engaging. And I think that the fact that they still push the action lever. That was a bummer to me because, like,
Flanders action.
Yeah.
It's like very Flandersized.
Yeah. And you know, when you look at the actual structure of it, like, it's a little bit, I mean, it's kind of a good adaptation in that they are following clues and doing this jet set around the world hot on the heels of a henchman and then Carmen. Like, that structure is a good thing, but like, when they get to those places, like, yeah, they learn about what's there and get a clue about where to go next, but there's also, like, I don't know, them slipping and falling down the face of the Sphinx and then blowing up a bunch of planes, claiming, you know, 13 souls on that great December morn. Like,
yeah. You know, fine adaptation, just, you know, and we're not the audience for it.
Nope.
I recognize that. Like, sure, kids, you know, kids might be more into this. I still think that kids should be into the game show, though.
Yeah.
Like, not, I know that makes me sound like an old guy where I'm like, oh, kids get into the stuff that I liked when I was a kid. But both of these things were around when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Right. You know, just
when you were you were 15.
Yeah, as a 15-year-old infant. One of them's clearly better.
They ran pretty much concurrently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It didn't go anywhere. So I think that the game show stacks up. Very fun.
Yeah.
Cartoon, less so. But both of which are good adaptations. And Carmen Sandiego in general is something I'm very in favor of.
Mm-hmm.
Existing in the world.
Yeah.
And I will check it, that if that Netflix show is the game show and has the spirit, I'm pretty into it.
The Netflix show it's an animated show.
Oh, well, I'm less interested.
Yes. So that's a bummer. Like, if it was a modern game show like that, sign me the F up. But
yeah.
Sean's timeline for the past couple of months has been just him being salty over them not using the Rockapella theme song for the Netflix series.
For the new one.
Yeah.
Not surprised by that.
Right.
You know, he seems like he's not the happiest man.
Right.
That's ever been. That doesn't mean he won't play at DuckCon.
We can make him happy.
Yeah, we can make him happy. He wants $75. Yeah, so we'll make him we'll make him ours. If he didn't want it to be ours, he wouldn't have put himself fucking for sale.
Okay,
man.
Yeah, all right.
You know, So thanks everybody for listening to this.
Yeah,
we really appreciate it. We like doing the show. We will be back in a month with more adaptations. The only thing you can really do is tell your friends.
Yeah. If you know somebody who you talk to, talk about duck feed stuff with, and they're not up on this, say like, oh, you should listen to this. They do 40 minutes on Rockapella.
Yeah. And you probably want to hear that. And they probably want to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who doesn't want Rockapella?
Mm.
You know, apparently not Sean. Most of the members of Rockapella. Yeah. Like, so some of the members of Rockapella are pretty over it, but, you're not.
Yeah. I was pretty disappointed. At one point, the Rockapella Wikipedia article had one of those awesome little Gantt charts that showed like who was in the band when.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always like those. So you can just kind of see, just watch them drop off.
Yeah. Like the obviously the Rednecks one,
which is
pretty wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. So thanks everybody. And we will see you in a month with more adaptation stuff.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your patronage, and thank you so much for listening.
Umbasa.
Umbasa.